It's the TED Radio Hour from NPR. I'm Manoush Zomorodi. On the show today, audacious solutions, daring and bold ideas to address some of the biggest problems of our time. And you can't get much bigger than the ocean, specifically protecting it from damage caused by humans.
I've sailed the seven seas, as they say. You know, there's only one ocean, but there's seven seas.
This is Tony Long. For decades, he was a member of the British Royal Navy.
Yeah, and I was only 17. Joined the Britannia Royal Naval College straight in as an officer.
His job was scouring the ocean, surveying via helicopter and radar to keep trade routes secure for the UK and its allies, safe from pirates and criminals, as well as to detect and deter illegal fishing.
What's called maritime domain awareness. You want to know what's happening around the fleet and beyond the horizon. And that way you can give the fleet advance notice of what they're approaching.
But surveying the seas had limitations. Let's say you spotted a fishing vessel off in the distance.
Quite often the fishing fleets of the world, they're not really clearly marked. You could see they were a fleet from a country. You could see that they were fishing, but you really couldn't work out whether they'd been authorised or not and who'd authorised them and what they were actually fishing. It's a real challenge.
Tony spent decades feeling frustrated by just how little information he could collect and how little he could do to stop illegal fishing.
Sometimes I'd wake up surrounded in a fishing fleet that despite having powerful technology at my fingertips, I didn't really know who they were or what they'd been doing.
Here's Tony Long on the TED stage.
It is a wild west out there, and rogue fishers are disobeying the laws that we put in place to protect our ocean and its resources, and they're pillaging colossal amounts of fish. One-fifth of seafood is thought to be caught illegally or is simply unreported, and that's a crime worth up to $23.5 billion. And it's a crime that skews the science, so it affects the sustainability of our fisheries. It threatens the health of our ocean and the well-being of millions of people, mainly in poorer countries. And it's not just pirate fishing that's threatening the future of our ocean. Out at sea, all spills are going undetected and therefore unpunished. There's a massive unmonitored growth in shipping, oil and gas exploration, and aquaculture, as I mentioned just a few. And this is piling pressure on an ocean that's already stressed by climate change. The straightforward fact is, if you can't see it, you can't manage it. And I know from experience, you can't monitor the whole ocean from the decks of ships.
So you decide to leave the military, and you decide that it's time for you to take on this problem that you had witnessed all those years sailing the ocean.
Yeah, so I left the Navy back in 2012. I mean, having been in the Navy nearly 30 years, it's actually quite a significant choice to leave. I mean, I loved my career. It's not that I wanted to leave. I just felt drawn to doing something different. I'd learned an awful lot in the Navy. I'd developed as a person. And I wanted to take what I'd learned and apply it in a way that I really, really could feel as if I'd contributed something to the planet and the preservation.
Can you just lay out for me plainly what it is that you wanted to get done, what you saw as your mission?
So what's really clear is overfishing and illegal fishing is a huge problem. Fishing is the biggest activity that humanity takes up on the ocean, and overfishing is now driving fish stocks towards collapse. Like a third of the world's fisheries are overfished. If you add to that illegal fishing, then you're starting to really skew the system.
I mean, I guess, you know, me listening to this, I'm like, oh, well, that's a problem in, you know, the South Pacific, thousands of miles away from here. But I guess anyone who goes out to eat in a restaurant or goes to the fish counter at their local grocery store is impacted by this?
Yeah, everybody's impacted, and it's a complex situation. So in the most straightforward terms, if we allow illegal fishing to continue, somewhere down the line we'll suffer. But if fish stocks start to collapse, then you're obviously also impacting on the food chain, which means significant biodiversity effects start to happen. It's providing the food and resource that probably 3 billion people rely on.
In your talk, you use the term pirate fishers.
Yeah, and it tends to be called illegal, unregulated, and unreported fishing. But what does that actually mean? It means that people are scamming the system. So they're doing something that is illegal, like fishing without authority, or they're fishing with something that is damaging, like drift nets or trawls where it's been banned, or they're simply not reporting their catch. So people are taking advantage of the lack of governance to their own end. It's piracy to what most people know.
I mean, the ocean, no one is in charge of the ocean, right? So is everyone just trying to skirt certain other governments' jurisdiction? They're just trying to make a living by going wherever they need to go?
Yes. So the high seas are the commons. That's everybody's responsibility. It's for the common good, and it should really be common knowledge about what's happening out on those high seas. But the economic zones that countries are responsible for are their own jurisdiction, and they can put rules in place and enforce under their own national rules. So you'd get some countries that have got quite strong mechanisms for implementing regulations and rules, but then alongside them, they've got countries that haven't. And therefore, the system starts to break up because it becomes patchy in response. And we needed some kind of global system of surveillance, global system of enforcement.
So countries have their own ways of regulating their waters and doing surveillance. But around 2017, several countries decided to make their data openly available. And this created an opportunity for Tony and the organization he now heads, Global Fishing Watch.
Once that proprietary information was suddenly in the public, it broke a glass ceiling.
Up there right now, there's thousands of satellites beaming back an enormous amount of data from the remotest parts of our ocean. What if we could harness that data, make it useful and available to people who care about the ocean? Well, thanks to rapid advances in technology and AI, we can do that. Using GPS location data and machine learning, Global Fishing Watch built the first ever live stream map to monitor the industrial fishing fleet. At the moment, we see some 70,000 vessels. We've made this information public and freely available to the world. But technology moves on. Thank you. Technology moves on rapidly. There's new and emerging technology that we need to embrace in order to give this picture to everybody who needs it. Today, any of you can click on the internet to explore roads and buildings on land. Why can't we do the same for the ocean? We need to create a dynamic, complete map of all industrial activity out at sea and make it available to everybody for free. We're going to do that using GPS location data and millions of gigabytes of satellite imagery. We'll use AI to map and monitor more than 1 million ocean-going vessels. We'll monitor the entire industrial fishing fleet and those dark vessels. We'll add in hundreds of thousands of cargo vessels, tens of thousands of oil and gas structures. Conservationists will have the information they need to protect critical habitats, like National Geographic pristine seas. They're using our data now to help work with governments and communities to protect critical habitats in 7 marine parks with a combined area of more than twice that of California. And we're going to give researchers the data they need to advance ocean science, and we're going to give the media, campaigners, and the public powerful knowledge about human activity out at sea.
Okay, I am just opening up right now the Global Fishing Watch map, and I am seeing now the whole globe, and there are different shades of greens and blues going on the oceans all over the place. What broadly am I seeing?
So the colours that you'll see out on the ocean is fishing activity. It's the global footprint of fishing is the easy way to think about it. If you wanted to look at one particular vessel's activity, you could click it, open up the screen for maybe 6 years of activity, and you'll literally watch the track evolve around the globe as that vessel's moved around. And if it's turned off his trackers at any stage, you'll see that it's turned them off and there'll be clear flags that he's gone missing. It could be that they're in port. It could be that they've turned it off for nefarious reasons. But that's what we're trying to do, make it so easy to understand what you're looking at.
So I'm looking at this one region sort of off the coast of China, and it says that there have been, over the last few months, 593 encounter events for carriers and fishing vessels. What is that describing?
So encounters is a description we use for when vessels meet at sea, when they rendezvous at sea. So the fishing vessels carry on fishing. They're drawing out everything they can, and they literally pass the fish to a cargo vessel who then takes the fish to port. So those encounters are really important because it's entirely legal if authorized, but it's entirely not if they're not. So we need to understand where they're happening.
Do you remember the first time you saw the map light up? I mean, it must have been magical. It's changing how we can even see the ocean.
Yes. So less than a decade ago, building this sort of system just wasn't possible. It's the advances in AI and the increase in the number of satellites that are orbiting the Earth that are making it possible. And a big moment was the North Korea report, as we call it. We looked into North Korean waters using all of the different data sets that we had and put together our report that exposed over 1,000 vessels fishing illegally in North Korean waters against the UN sanctions. That was a turning point because people then realised what the power of the data could do.
We call them dark vessels. And generally, dark vessels are up to no good. So we had to turn to other sources of data. We looked at satellite-based radar and optical imagery, and we lit that region up. We revealed an armada of almost 1,000 vessels, pillaging more than $500 million worth of squid each year. It's one of the largest cases of illegal fishing ever seen. But there's huge human impact too, tragedy. Because the smaller, more rickety North Korean boats could not compete with that vast fleet, they were pushed further and further out to sea. And as a result, hundreds of them would be capsized to be washed ashore in Japan with the crew either starving or dead. We made our findings public, and as a result, we compelled the authorities to take action. Illegal fishing in that region has dropped by 75%, and we're not seeing hundreds of vessels now washing ashore in Japan.
It turns out that China was behind those vessels that were fishing illegally in North Korean waters. But can you even hold them or any other country accountable for their actions?
Yes, you can hold countries to account. And it starts with providing them with that information. So if we use the example of North Korea, the Republic of Korea, and Japan, peer-reviewed what we'd found, and then they took it multilaterally to the Chinese and demonstrated clearly what was going wrong. So the Chinese government could not deny it. It was there. So that was one level of pressure. But we also worked with Inabina, who published in NBC online, and it's a beautiful story that went global. And therefore, there was a huge public pressure to see a response. We ourselves, Global Fishing Watch, have had no direct contact with the Chinese. It was done through the government, Republic of Korea and Japan, and through open investigative journalism. And what we've seen is a drop in the amount of illegal fishing in that area as a result. So you bring pressure to bear in different ways.
Can I just ask you what ideally that would look like? Like, give me an example of what you would love to see happen.
Yeah. So what is the ideal? So what I would like to see is every country not be afraid of sharing information, to realize that the information shared is far more powerful than the information retained in this situation. And therefore, whenever a country is talking about becoming transparent through Global Fishing Watch, they are encouraged to work with the industry and with the local fishermen to make sure they understand that this data is not going to be used inappropriately.
Yeah, because the word surveillance, I mean, that rings a lot of alarm bells for people.
a lot of alarm bells. And of course, all of the conversations around words like artificial intelligence and the ethics of the data. So we're very conscious of that. And we're also very clear about personal information. No, the fishermen themselves do not want their personal information shared. It doesn't get shared. It's about the vessel. What goes public is just enough to show that that country is involved in transparency and that most of the important data is retained behind the scenes by the country who owns the data. And we've got 12 countries now committed to sharing their data with us, which may not seem many, but there is no global treaty on transparency. There's nothing for us to hang our hat on other than working well with people and talking them through the story and making them understand why it's beneficial and then seeing them get on board. The fact that transparency and open data is now talked about in every forum, at every congress, at every conference, tells me that people have started to realise that this is an important way of understanding what's happening out on the ocean. The beautiful thing about Global Fishing Watch is that it doesn't have to be Global Fishing Watch that does it. We can have everyone else using our data in order to assist.
Tony, it's nice to hear good news about the environment for once, that there's something happening.
It is. There is a lot happening. I think people have started to realise that the ocean is not just the fish or just what's inside the ocean. Actually, it's people on land that depend on the ocean.
That was Tony Long. He's the CEO of Global Fishing Watch. You can see Tony's full talk at TED.com. Thank you so much for listening to our show about audacious solutions. It was inspired by the Audacious Project, a funding initiative organized by TED that connects philanthropists with organizations and people working to solve some of the world's biggest problems. You can find out more about all the projects you heard on this episode and many others at audaciousproject.com. This episode was produced by Harsha Nahada, Lane Kaplan-Levinson, Fiona Guerin, and Andrea Gutierrez. It was edited by Sanaz Meshkinpour, Rachel Faulkner-White, and me. Our production staff at NPR also includes Matthew Cloutier, James Delahousie, and Katie Monteleone. Beth Donovan is our executive producer. Our audio engineers were Josh Newell and Kwesi Lee. Our theme music was written by Ramtin Arablouei. Our partners at TED are Chris Anderson, Colin Helms, Michelle Quint, Alejandra Salazar, and Daniela Balarezo. I'm Anoush Zamarodi, and you've been listening to the TED Radio Hour from NPR.